All aboard the magic bus.
Hi, everybody.
Abracadabra.
Where did that come from?
There's Marshall Brodeen in row three.
Yeah.
Penn and Teller are in the back.
Oh, this bus only has magicians on it.
Yes, it's the magic bus.
It's the magic bus. Hi, everybody. It's Bill, and I hope it's Wendy. Welcome to the show. I'm scared. Help me. I'm going to put a help me sign on the window.
Of the bus?
We should have a pretty good show. I'm looking at it on paper. It's possible we'll screw it up, but we'll find out in the next couple of hours. If you want to call us or text us, 981-7200, we'll get that done. And that's all I have to say at this time.
All right. Well, welcome aboard the bus.
I had to ask Jasmine, our producer. Jasmine is younger than we are. And is certainly more hip to what's going on in the world than either you or me, I think.
Many people older than us are
also more hip.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question about it. So
Older
than we, if I may throw in a French word. All right, so I keep reading stories about kids, teenagers, who are being injured doing something called the Kiki Challenge.
Yeah, I never heard of that.
I don't know what that is. I'm guessing that's a new thing.
Guys, it's actually called In My Feelings Challenge.
The In My Feelings Challenge. How come in the paper, Jazz, in several papers and websites, they're calling it the Kiki Challenge? I don't know who Kiki is.
Kiki is the girl that Drake used to date.
Yeah.
And so
Drake,
it's
the singer.
Kiki. Right. Do you love me? So yeah. That's why they're calling it Kiki instead of the In My Feelings.
So when you do this challenge, you're proving to someone that you love them?
Is that what it is?
No, it's just a dance challenge. Like, everybody does a little dance challenge.
Who's challenging other people to dance?
Who's zooming who?
Who's zooming who? That's a good question, Wendy. That's the question that needs to be asked.
I read that in the Weekly Reader.
Who is zooming
whom? The song is called In My Feelings.
Oh.
I don't see the connection.
All right, so I'm not sure I do either yet.
Well, Kiki.
I guess so.
Yeah. Drake dated Kiki.
Former girlfriend,
so
Kiki.
It's just like a cute little bop.
Okay. And it's being done for good or for evil?
It's done for good. It's supposed to be a fun challenge.
But why are kids getting hurt doing it?
Because they're trying to be extra by jumping out of the car while it's running.
Oh, no. Kiki
challenge.
Would not approve of this.
You know, this is why I don't want kids to have licenses.
Because of the Kiki challenge.
Remember what was that fire drill that people would pull up to a red light and they'd get out, run around the car?
It was called, I know this is now racially insensitive, but it was called the Chinese fire drill.
Can I just ask why?
I don't think it went on in China at all. It was just something people, I have no idea why it was called that.
Well, it was stupid.
It was stupid,
yeah,
right.
In China, everybody's on a bike or
right.
a rickshaw.
Right. I mean, yeah, right.
I mean,
right.
They're not exactly, you know, I don't know.
No, Mary, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I have no idea why it was referred to as that. I don't know. But that seemed like the potential there for somebody getting hurt
yeah.
was certainly great. But now in this, every day I read more and more kids are getting hurt doing this, and I can't figure out why.
Is it maybe because they're videoing themselves and they're not paying attention to their
maybe.
Surroundings? If you just got out and danced, that's one thing. But if you're actually trying to
right.
film yourself.
Right. By the way, if you and I are ever together and for reasons that can't be explained, I just start dancing.
I'll shoot you.
I was going to ask to be shot, but just...
Slap you?
No, just sit me down.
All right.
Put a blanket on me or something.
I meant with a Nerf gun.
Something. Oh, yeah, with a Nerf gun. That's fine. That's fine. So then Jasmine showed me, because I said, I need to see the dance. Show me the dance. And it looks like the potential for pain is involved. It looks like if you did it... There's a lot of crazy shaking going on, Wendy.
It's kind of a slow movement, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the guy that she showed me doing it wasn't even a teenager. He was maybe not our age, but he was heading in that direction.
Right. So the guy who created it, that's the guy that I showed you the video of.
Who is that guy?
Shiggy.
Oh, is that Shiggy?
You getting Shiggy with it?
Now, the other members of the Scooby-Doo gang were not shown in this video. It was just Shiggy.
You make me nervous every time you say that. I'm sorry. I don't even know where the dump
like
button is.
Somebody's
in this
gonna get hurt doing a dance. So when he does this, how is he? There must be a way, Jasmine, that Shiggy is making money off of this, right?
Yeah, supposedly Drake, since he started the challenge and everybody's doing it, Drake gave him a amount of money. I'm not sure how much, but it was a sum.
Yeah,
and yeah, he's making a lot of money off.
He's rich off of this. Shiggy's rich.
I'm unplugging my computer. I'm sick of all this. Unless we come up with a better challenge.
Here's my idea. tomorrow, Lollapalooza, they're going to have tons of people there, Wendy. You and I go up on the main stage. We do this dance. We do the Kiki dance. We hold up the WGN banner. Everybody wins.
If I thought you were serious for half a second, I might take you up on
Would you?
Because, first of all, we'd get some press for the show.
Yes, we would.
We'd get a lot of laughs, which is I search for those every day.
Also, you rarely see on the front page of a paper the word numbskull. But I think tomorrow's Tribune and or Sun-Times would have your photo and my photo and it would say, local numbskulls hurt themselves doing the Kiki Challenge.
It'd be good for the show.
It'd be great for the show.
Plus, you have to wear this pink jumpsuit or running tracksuit that the Shiggy guy has.
Oh, is
Bill
that
already
a,
has
I have one of those, but good. I didn't. Is that a requirement?
You're like WGN's Polly Walnuts, but it's pink.
Yes, you can move better in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's loose-fitting clothing.
Yeah, that, and you want that. Ooh, you want. You need that. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, so in the show today, here's some music. This is the Drake. Right, Jazz? This is the Drake. This is the Drake.
Don't all his songs pretty much sound like this?
There is a sound through most of his music that I've heard anyway that is sort of similar. It's not bad. I like it.
I'm not saying it's bad, but it sounds
similar.
Very similar.
Yeah. On the show today, you'll hear about a man who scammed McDonald's or tried to scam McDonald's for their McDonald's Monopoly game.
I thought he did it a few times.
Well, he came close.
Oh, okay.
He didn't get away with it. They figured
Can
him out.
Can he teach me how to figure out the Jewel Monopoly? Because I swear I'm going to win.
He's working on that now for you. Also, Dr. John Duffy will join us later on. That's at 11:05. Both you and I were listening to Steve Cochran's show earlier when they did this kind of running segment about people who wanted to be something when they were a kid, and then maybe they achieved it, maybe they didn't. I think you're the only person I know who flat out decided early on what they were going to be, and that's what you are.
Eighth grade, sometime in junior high, so sixth to eighth grade, I wanted to be a DJ.
Yeah.
A DJ.
You and figured it out that early.
I would commandeer my girlfriend Sue's record player every time she had a party, and I would just pick the tunes and put them on.
And good for you, because there were one of them back then.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Yvonne Daniels, and
there weren't very many women in the business.
But then when I got to high school, I thought, you know, it's going to be, how do you get a job in radio? It's going to be impossible. So that's when I dabbled with, I played basketball, so I thought, oh, I'm going to be a PE teacher. And then I changed my mind, and then I thought, I took a psychology class in high school, and I said, I would love to be a psychologist.
Uh-huh.
But then I was determined to find a way into radio.
It's amazing that at that young of an age.
And you knew you wanted to do something in the
arts, but not necessarily. I didn't know radio, although once an hour I would do a read for the Ishnala Supper Club, and my friends would go, what are you doing? And I go, I don't know. It just feels right. But I know people that were in the realm of it. You know, they kind of knew which direction, but I mean, you.
I pinpointed it.
Right on the nose.
I loved music and I loved to talk.
Yeah.
I thought, what better career?
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, were you anywhere close to that?
I kind of had a handle on it pretty early that I wanted to do something.
Something in the news business?
In the media, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was always the kid announcing the Little League games and everything like that.
Oh.
My town.
That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Play by play. We'll call you that now.
Yeah. Play by play.
Hey, play by play.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, I prefer PvP. My mom has a picture of me. Well, never mind.
I was sure I was going to write movies. That's that. From the time I was a little kid, every time I'd see a movie, in my head I'd go, they should have done this, or that guy shouldn't have come in. They should have had that happen.
And that's how, I mean, you watch a movie very differently than I do. I watch a movie, and I just watch a movie.
Yeah.
You're thinking, boy, that's a beautiful scene. Boy, the director should have. I don't have that in me.
It's both a blessing and a curse.
Yeah,
though.
I can imagine.
Sometimes I try my best to turn it off and go, just enjoy this for what it is and don't get too technical. Just take it in for, you know, for what they're providing. And it's hard for me to do that.
For many years, watching a movie was a hassle for me because my husband, Jim, worked. He was one of the first technical producers in radio.
Yeah.
And he worked for Jonathan Brandmeier.
Yeah.
And every time we'd watch a movie, he'd go, hang on, I got to grab that drop. So he'd pause it and he'd record it onto I don't even remember what he used back then, a mini dat or something. And then we could proceed with the movie. But it was interrupted hundreds of times because in the old days, if you were a technical producer, you had to find the audio.
It wasn't on YouTube.
No!
There was no YouTube.
I mean, you can Google anything and it'll be on YouTube and you can get the audio.
Right.
But back then, I mean, you know, he was like a frequent flyer at Blockbuster and Family Video. I got so many calls from Arnold Schwarzenegger telling us that we hadn't turned our movie in. Remember those calls that they used
to, yeah, it was a celebrity impersonator, obviously.
It was?
Yeah, I don't think Schwarzenegger cared. I don't think he cared.
Way to pull back the curtain.
But getting back to Steve's point, for you especially, because there were so few women doing this a generation ago, it must have seemed like an impossible dream, right?
It did. Of course, I was one of the founding mothers of radio.
Yes, the FMRs.
There was Yvonne Daniels. There was
Patty Hayes to some extent.
Patty Hayes, not that much older than me, but she was
a little ahead.
Terry Hemmert.
Yeah,
Wendy Terry Rice Hemmert, from sure. WXRT. But the legendary, there was Jackie Renice,
who was on,
I believe, WLS overnight, and she was really good.
Jackie Renice.
You remember her, Steve?
Well, she did some work here, too, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I loved her.
Yeah.
She did, like, overnights on LS or something.
But you never thought, oh, that's what'll hold me back, is that there's so few women
in the
business.
Didn't even think of it.
Good. That's excellent.
I didn't even think of it. And then in high school, someone we knew who was a couple years older than us and went to Triton College was a DJ on WRRG. And there was a... Everybody wants to be a DJ week. So my girlfriend Gail and I said, we were sophomores, and we said, let's do it. Let's do it. So being in the studio, it's like, this is what I got to do. I got to find some way to do it.
Yeah.
There was a Kankakee radio station called WBYG, the big one. And I would listen to them, you know, and I'd do the trivia contests and all that stuff. And they advertised one time that they wanted people interested in radio. We're going to have a big event for you at the local Holiday Inn. Come to that if you're interested in working in radio. Well, of course, I was like, oh, my God, this is for
this
me.
Is your break.
Right. But what they really, they were trolling for salespeople.
Oh.
No, you know,
like, oh, forget it.
How quickly did you leave that meeting, Steve?
Well, not quickly because, no, I still was like, you know, I was... My eyes were agog at the morning midday DJs in Kankakee, Illinois.
Yeah. I still remember there was, this must have been either third grade or fourth grade, I can't remember which, but the teacher would have us all, we did a picture of us, we had to draw a picture with the career that we wanted, and half of the boys were astronauts, some of them were cowboys.
What grade was this?
Third grade or fourth grade.
Cowboys in third grade.
A lot of cowboys
still?
And astronauts. A couple superheroes. A lot of guys thought that seems to be a line
you?
Of work. No, I was. Oh. I knew the money wasn't in superheroing back then. You couldn't make a good living.
But it's a feel good.
It does. Yeah, it feels good to help people, certainly. But it was a very unrealistic. A lot of the I remember the number one for girls at the time was nurses.
Yeah.
I don't know that that would still be true today. Maybe.
God bless the nurses out there.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, for all my surgical procedures I've had and just talking to nurses, they work so hard and they're so giving.
Yeah.
And I just, they really deserve to be paid way more than they are. They work harder than doctors sometimes.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. But now, looking back, I don't know that any of those kids, I mean, I don't remember exactly what everybody put. A lot of them wanted to be either baseball players or football players, and none of them did. So it's
what did you put in third grade?
Oh, boy. I can't
You're
remember.
You're criticizing everybody else's, but what did little Billy Luff want
I
to be?
I can't remember what it was, but it was something, it's something that I ended up not being. But I always knew that there was like some writing component, because I wanted to write ads for a while. I wanted to be in advertising, and then that switched over to movies.
There was a 30-second period where I wanted to be a garbage man.
Because why?
Because there were some really cute garbage men in Brookfield, and I thought it would be fun to work with them.
Hang out with the garbage guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I heard they got paid really well.
Yeah.
How old were you then?
I don't know, high school.
In high school, yeah. That's.
I thought it would be a good summer job.
Sure. You go into your guidance counselor. Yeah, I want to be a garbage woman.
Collector.
But the people who do go into that always talk about the finds, that they're throwing away garbage and then they always find things. That's part of the thrill of the job.
I've never talked to anybody about that.
Oh, yeah. That's like that's like one of the built-in bonuses.
Stereos, antiques,
yeah,
bodies of 57-year-old men.
Right. Who knows?
Oh, those bulging.
Every day is different.
Triceps, lifting those metal garbage
yeah,
cans back
go.
In the day.
All right, we'll take a break. You can ponder that.
While she showers.
Yeah. A quick break, some news, and then more show. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to call in, we're at 312-981-7200. Wendy, you have said on many, many, many occasions that at some point in your life, you will win the Jewel Monopoly game.
And you've laughed at me every time.
I have. Sometimes in front of you, sometimes I wait till you leave the room and then I laugh.
Sometimes Bill and I call each other that evening.
Right, and giggle together.
Someone has to win, you guys.
Someone has to win.
No one has to win.
I've also played the McDonald's one, and all I've won, at least I've won something on the McDonald's one, where it's a free Egg McMuffin.
Oh.
Or a free small drink, yeah. Or a free medium fry.
Feels good to win, doesn't it?
It does, just to keep me coming back for more.
Sure. I want a bagel on the Monopoly game.
Oh, wow.
Oh, at the Jewel one.
Uh-huh. Nicely done, Mary.
Oh, boy.
Nicely done. Jeff Mace joins us right now. Jeff is a crime journalist and a writer, has written several best-selling books for Amazon, The Spy with No Name and Handsome Devil. And he joins us right now to talk about a wonderful piece that he did for the Daily Beast. Jeff, thanks for being here. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
So good to talk to you. Loved what you wrote for the Daily Beast. Please, if you would, I want to tell this in some sort of chronological order. Explain who Michael Hoover is.
Well, Michael Hoover was one of the 50 defendants that were caught cashing in stolen McDonald's tickets for the Monopoly promotion. All of these tickets were all stolen during a 12-year period between 1987 and 2001, and it was all one guy who was an insider at the printing factory where McDonald's printed their tickets.
Genius. I need to get a job there.
So this guy, this insider, and he referred to himself as what now?
Uncle Jerry.
Uncle Jerry. Figured out that somebody's going to win this game. McDonald's has given away a lot of money. Somebody's going to win it. So he figured out a way to be the guy who could broker a win, correct?
Well, like all scams, it started off pretty small. So he started stealing a $25,000 game piece, and he gave that to his stepbrother, and he gave another one to his local butcher. But as with all scams, greed took over.
Yep.
And soon he was stealing millions of dollars of prizes, up to $24 million in cash and prizes like Dodge Vipers and PT Cruisers.
All right, and this went on for how many years? This was quite a lengthy amount of time.
12 years. It would probably still be going on today if it wasn't for the FBI.
All right, I want to talk about the FBI's involvement and how they cracked this case. But in a way, when you look at it, we all got scammed because anybody who went to McDonald's thinking that they stood any kind of a reasonable choice of winning, they really didn't. If this guy was zeroing in on the prizes and farming them out to friends, that the average person who went to McDonald's to get a game piece, they didn't stand any kind of chance.
But it did show that there's also winning pieces out there, had he not stolen them, because everyone doubts that there's ever really a winning piece.
Yeah.
Well, I never won anything. I think I won a fillet of fish is my biggest win.
Congratulations.
They're pretty good.
All right, so talk about the FBI's involvement. How exactly did they figure this out, Jeff?
Well, they got an anonymous tip in the year 2000, and they started tapping people's phones, and they figured out that this was a massive operation. The mob were involved. There were strip club owners and drug traffickers. Basically, Uncle Jerry had fallen in with the wrong crowd and started giving these tickets to organized criminals, and that really was the start of his downfall.
Was he giving them away or was he selling them?
He was selling them. So he'd come up to you and he'd say, hey, you want to win $1 million? Here's $1 million ticket. That'll be $50,000, please.
But what was it about him? Because if somebody did come up to me, Jeff, and suggest that, I would look at the person and go, how could you possibly have an inside track? What do you know
and
that I don't
know? And how could I trust you?
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust them and give them 50 grand.
Yeah.
Well, this was a very sophisticated operation, and there was a lot of lies being told. So one of the recruiters would say to you, oh, my friend won this $1 million ticket, and, well, he's going through a divorce right now, and, well, he doesn't want to give the ex-wife half, so... Yeah, he just wants to sell it and get some cash. And, you know, it was all very believable. Many of the defendants who had cashed these tickets, they thought it was on the up and up. They thought they were doing somebody a favor.
I can't remember if I read this in your piece or if you've already kind of suggested this, but in one particular instance, wasn't there one family who had three winners within the same family?
Yes, yeah. And also, most of them lived in the same town in South Carolina. So when the FBI got a map of South Carolina, they put the pins on the winners' addresses and realized that five or six of them had all won massive prizes. I mean, the odds were astronomical.
All right, so if the FBI has a hard time believing that, McDonald's has to keep tabs on who is winning their game. Why didn't McDonald's figure out years earlier something's amiss?
Well, McDonald's had no idea. They were completely shocked when the FBI called them. And they'd hired this third-party company, this marketing company in Los Angeles, to run the promotion for them. So they had no idea until they got the phone call from the FBI.
You know, I think about it, and it took 12 years for someone to get onto him. If he just would have calmed down and stopped, perhaps he never would have been caught.
Well, you know, I speak to a lot of criminals as a crime journalist. I hear the same story over and over again. Once they can do it, they will do it. And once they've crossed the line, people tend to keep going until they're caught.
There's no turning back after that point, I would imagine. You mentioned
exactly.
he had taken these tickets for like a Dodge Viper and probably your dream house or whatever the things they had. Did he ever steal tickets that weren't an instant win? Like, did he finally get Park Place and Boardwalk? Because that's what everybody was going for.
I think I was going for the Short Line Railroad. I didn't see anything in the FBI transcripts about the Short Line Railroad, though.
You have to. It's so funny that you even have to explain this, Jeff. But the way this game works, and everybody who's ever played the Monopoly game at McDonald's or Jewel or any of the places that have it, you realize at some point, wow, I'm only missing one of every set. I'm only one away. And then the more people you talk to, you realize, well, they're missing the exact same one as I am. I used to work at a place where the whole office was baffled by this. How is it possible that we're all playing this game and we're all missing the same piece? Isn't that sad?
Well, they print so many game pieces that they print half a billion with a B, billion game pieces, but they only print one of the Short Line Railroad or Boardwalk, and those tickets are so rare that they actually hand seed them in factories. So that, well, in this case, Uncle Jerry was trusted to go to a factory and physically put it on a soft drink cup or a Big Mac box. But of course, we know Uncle Jerry wasn't putting them on Big Mac boxes. He was putting them straight into his pocket.
So do we have, we are not involved. Do you have any idea who this informant was that ratted out Uncle Jerry?
In the story on thedailybeast.com, I actually uncover that it was something to do with the Columbo crime family. There is a moment in the story when one of the characters suggests that it was a member of the crime family that called the FBI. We don't know for sure, but it's the most obvious solution if you read the story.
How does McDonald's respond to your story here? They must be thrilled, huh?
I haven't heard from them, but I did notice that on Monday they were trying to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Big Mac, but unfortunately no one noticed that because this story kind of took over the news agenda.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what will they do going forward, Jeff? Do they have some plan so that something like this could never happen again? It's a PR nightmare, so they don't want this to happen.
Yeah, we know this can't happen again. The checks and balances have all been changed. And, I mean, the main thing that security experts told me while I was reporting this story was you never leave one guy in charge. You always circle out the responsibility so that no one person has the ultimate power. So you can imagine now that when they run the Monopoly game, and they still do, but they cycle out the responsibilities.
Read the whole article. Find out more. It's at thedailybeast.com, how an ex-cop rigged McDonald's Monopoly game and stole millions. For those of us who haven't gotten to the end yet, can you tell us what happened to Uncle Jerry?
Well, everyone's arrested, and Uncle Jerry pleads guilty, and he serves just 3 years in prison, but he's still paying back $12 million in restitution.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Doesn't sound so good when you have to pay it all back, does it?
No, it doesn't. Jeff, great meeting you. I'm assuming you're working on another book, right? You got another book coming out anytime soon?
I'm hard at work on something, yes, so watch this space.
Excellent. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's Jeff Mache, everybody, a crime journalist and writer. His books include The Spy with No Name and Handsome Devil. And like we all said, there's a great piece in the Daily Beast chronicling the McDonald's game gone wrong. So find it on dailybeast.com. It's right there.
How could you stop? I mean, seriously, if it's like all of a sudden you pocket $25,000.
Yeah.
Wow, I got away with it. I'm going to push a little harder. But if he didn't.
I'm sure if you're him and you get away with it once or twice, you say, well, I have figured out the formula. I can do this for the rest of my life if I want to. It's found money. It's got to be so simple.
But doesn't every criminal think eventually they're going to get caught, or they don't think that way?
It's so funny. We've got John Duffy coming in a little bit, and he knows a lot more about the psyche than I do. But I've heard people say that people who do that sort of thing, part of the thrill of it is
getting
at
away
some
with
point,
it.
Yeah. I know I'm going to get caught at some point, but the adrenaline rush comes in. How long can I get away with it before that day comes? You know, this on paper, you say to yourself, this guy has figured out the most brilliant formula for success. It's illegal, but he has figured it out. So how can he not do it? If you're of the mindset of I've done it once, I've done it twice, I'm just going to keep doing it.
So let me ask you this. If you had your own business.
Yes.
Wouldn't you be leery of hiring anyone but family members?
Including family members.
I guess, yeah, you know? Even that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, all the trust that goes into a, you know, I worked at the Gap, I worked at Brookfield Zoo, and I worked really hard to be a good employee because I liked my job.
Yeah.
But they had to trust me, and I think it would be really hard to trust anyone, especially like a teenager.
Oh, without a doubt. I told you, when my wife and I started dating, she was waitressing at a restaurant, and she said, and it's a good-sized restaurant, a well-known Chicago restaurant. She said there's about 30 or 35 wait people on staff. Three of them were not stealing money. Three of them out of 35. And she told me all the different ways. We still go into restaurants, and something will happen. Something that you and I would just not even blink at. And she'll go, you know what this means, right? And I'll go, what? And she'll go, that the waiter is scamming us. They're not scamming us, scamming the restaurant. And I'll go, how? And she'll explain how. And I'll go, how do you even think of that? That's brilliant.
She should go undercover and expose all these people.
I know.
Seriously.
Good idea. It's a great idea.
She can write crime novels.
She could. Yes, she could. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. I noticed both you and I, for some reason, have crime watch stories for this segment. I've got a bunch of them. You've got a bunch of them.
I don't know which one to go with. I said
the one you started to tell me is very disturbing.
Oh.
Very disturbing.
Of course, now I can't find this one. Bill, I lost it.
What happened to it? Stolen. Another crime watch story.
Oh, here we go. This was released from USA Today at 3:21 this morning, so this is as fresh as it comes. A 74-year-old man's eyes were gouged out during a Friday assault in Rochester, Minnesota, according to local media reports. The victim was missing both eyes and multiple teeth when he was found by police. This is according to the Post Bulletin. Mahad Aziz, an 18-year-old relative of the victim, was charged in connection with the assault. Aziz used only his hands in the assault, the victim told police. The victim's eyes have not been found. Now, I think if you found a tooth, sometimes, you know, you can
put it back.
I don't know if that works.
If you bring it to the dentist, sometimes they can put it back. I'm almost positive that's not the case with eyes. Almost sure.
Oh, you guys.
Is that why you wanted me to do this story? You used me as a setup for your crazy humor?
I don't know what you're talking about.
And you fell for it, Wendy. Why do you fall for him?
You know, I'm trying to think how many years I've known you. It's over 25 years, and I'm still... I am ashamed of myself.
I am, too.
There are a lot of things we don't know, according to police. The nature of the victim's injuries make it difficult to determine exactly what happened in the assault. He was charged Monday with first-degree assault. It's an unusual charge in the region because it requires the victim to have suffered a permanent disabling injury.
That would be
it. You don't think this is it?
This is it.
You lose your eyes, there's no replacement.
Right.
Ah.
Terrible.
I can't believe you used me as a setup.
Hold
whatever.
Right now.
All right. How about this story out of Texas, Wendy? where crime runs rampant in Texas. A group of thieves in Texas have stolen a shark from the San Antonio Aquarium, wrapped it in a wet blanket, which is you sometimes, and smuggled it out.
I'm going home.
Disguised as a baby in a stroller.
Well, that is creative.
This is very creative. If you're gonna steal a shark, in and of itself, that's very creative. But to dress it as a baby, this sounds like they were watching cartoons right before they committed this crime. Three people were filmed by surveillance cameras taking a female horn shark named Miss Helen out of her tank.
Miss Helen?
Is that a good shark name?
Miss Helen?
If you're going to name a shark, you want to give... the shark
baby. This isn't as good, but I had to come up with something.
This is still good. If you're going to name a shark, you want to name a shark something that brings fear.
Like Jabberjaws.
Jabberjaws is a good name. CPO Sharky. What do you think of that?
Bitey.
Bitey the shark.
Great White.
Great White, Steve. Well, that's a brand of shark.
What?
That's a type of shark.
That's a bad hairband shark.
Still good. Still good. Three people were filmed by surveillance cameras taking a female horn shark named Miss Helen out of her tank and then leaving. Horn sharks, as you know, are a small breed that rarely grow larger than 3 feet.
That's still pretty big. Gotta be honest with
you. A shark, even at that length, that's tough. Because, the shark is always biting, Wendy. You know that.
Did you say it was Miss Helen Crump?
No, it doesn't say Crump, Steve. Oh. Just Miss Helen. Miss Helen the shark is 16 inches long. But even to disguise it as a baby, I mean, anyone who sees it, you're going to go, you got a hideous baby.
No one's going to say that.
Looks just like his dad.
Right. Right. That's how you blame. Right. You blame whichever parent isn't there. Right. Well, my husband's not that attractive, so he looks like my husband.
But it was all covered up. You're not going to see, the baby's sleeping. Oh, because I'm like that. I'll see somebody in a stroller. I'll be like, let me see how old.
Yikes.
Oh, baby's sleeping. Miss Helen's sleeping.
No, because sharks never sleep.
Yes, they do.
Sharks? No, they're always moving. They're never sleeping.
Do they do it like, never mind.
Like what?
You've done that twice today.
I know.
So either tell the story or edit yourself.
By far the smartest of the three of us. Like you and I would go, I've already thought it.
Make good radio.
No, I know.
Boy, do we know that. If there's one thing we know, it's exactly what you just said. A video of the theft was posted by the aquarium. You can see a man lift the shark out of the tank, and then there's 40 seconds of footage. A member of the staff tried to confront the group, but was unable to stop them from taking the shark. The aquarium wrote on Facebook that they had immediately noticed the theft, but they were unable to stop the suspects. They called the police. They followed them to the car and everything. Can't exactly force them to give it back. The police will have to do that.
So what do you give a new mom with the baby shark?
A very strong teething ring. Very strong.
A nursing stool.
No, no. No. All right. We must take a break. Dr. John Duffy will join us, unless he's thought about it, in which case he won't. We'll figure it out. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I mentioned earlier that I wanted to be in radio when I was younger, but I also dabbled with being a PE teacher or a psychologist. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't happen. But we have a show psychologist. That's close enough.
Yes.
Dr. John Duffy will be with us after the news. And the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn, and that'll set you up. News brought to you by Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace at 11 o'clock. Here's Steve Bertrand. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are here on WGN Radio, and we have our WGN Radio psychologist, which we need on this show, Bill, I got to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. John Duffy is with us. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Can I just very briefly say, yesterday I walked into 7-Eleven to purchase garbage stickers, and I said, how's it going? And the person behind the counter went, fantastic. And all of a sudden, really? Awesome. And then I was in a better mood. So from now on, even if anything's wrong, I'm great.
Oh. It makes a difference,
doesn't
right?
It
makes a little bit of a difference,
How about these businesses that when they pick up the phone, like say you call them and they say, it's a beautiful day at WGN Radio. Do you buy into that?
Who do you call?
No, I do not.
Just places that are happy. No place upsetting. But yeah, it seems a little forced, doesn't
I think
it?
I think you can overdo it. There is a grocery store in our neighborhood, Wendy, I think you'll recognize this pretty quickly, where everybody in the checkout line is super upbeat about every single item that you have passing through.
Yeah.
And at some point, it feels a little disingenuous, and you're kind of like, you know what? I just kind of want to get through here. And
let's get in, get out.
If something's really great, let me know, but it's, it kind of jumps the shark when everything's great. Right.
Lima beans? Whoa! You're going to have a great time with your lima beans.
But this was just a simple, how's it going? Fantastic.
Oh.
There's a worse way to go about it, right? That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Sets a tone.
Absolutely. You wanted to talk about a kind of coaching that I'm not familiar with. Wendy, I can't speak for you, but I didn't know such a thing existed. Explain.
About 2 weeks ago in my office, there was a 14-year-old boy. I did not know him well, but he said, hey, if you can, and kids do this all the time, they want me to work their parents a little bit. And he said, if you can, I'd love to have a Fortnite coach. And for those of you who don't know what Fortnite is, it's this video game. There's about 125 million kids playing this game.
It's an interactive video game.
It is, yeah. And so he wanted his parents to hire him a coach to excel at this game and get better at this game. And at the time, I thought, well, I don't think there's such a thing. And if there is, there were Halo coaches back when they came out about 20, 25 years ago for elite players who looked like they were going to get sponsored and actually make some money doing these games, which there's a very small subset of people who do this kind of thing, who actually make some money. But this kid just wanted to get better. He hadn't won yet, and it's a game where the turnover is fast. It's not a game that takes months to play. It takes, you know, under an hour to play. So if you've never won and you've been playing for hours and hours, it's discouraging. And so parents are starting to hire. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning, are starting to hire Fortnite coaches for their kids, mostly their sons.
All right. I just have to say one thing. I think my kids play it. They have other games that they like better, but every kid plays it, and sometimes it doesn't seem cool, so they say they don't.
Right.
But I would, if they want to play, that's fine. I probably should prohibit some of the game time they play. I guess I don't really care, especially during the summer, but I'm certainly not paying for a coach for them.
Well, and I think that the idea behind it is my kid has no wins. He or she is not an athlete, not a musician, not a an actor or an actress. So this
or
is
a chef.
Or a chef, right? So I'm going to build their self-esteem and self-worth by, you know, falsely creating this acumen for Fortnite.
The falsely creating is the problem, though, don't you think?
I do. Well, I think there's a couple of problems. Definitely that is one of them. That, you know, this is where we're having our kids build their self-worth when there are other far more productive ways of doing so. And the video game culture itself, in moderation, is fine. It's kind of like watching Netflix or something like that. Yeah. In the extreme, it can be depressing and anxiety provoking and, you know, cause attention problems and worse, you know.
But all right, so now put yourself in the mind of the parent who has to explain that to a child. It almost seems distancing. It's almost like a kid saying, well, you don't understand. That's what goes on in the world today. I know you didn't have it, but our generation does have it. How do you handle that as a parent?
That's definitely the point the article's trying to make, and the point this kid was trying to make to me is, like, you know, my parents don't understand how important this is to me. And the truth of the matter is, when you sit one-on-one with a 14 or 15-year-old boy, a lot of their self-worth comes from the ability to play this game and play it well. A lot of their social connection comes from talking to people while they are playing this game. So one thing we miss is we think this is a one-dimensional thing. They're sitting in the basement. They may as well be watching TV. The tricky part is kids actually are gaining a skill and they are connecting with their friends. It's just a different way than what we are used to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've brought this up before. You know, when I was in junior high and high school, I couldn't wait to the weekends because I wanted to go out. Whoever was having a party, I was out. I did not want to be home. I might have partaken in things that I shouldn't have at my age. My kids have not been big on going out. I have friends whose kids stay in and play games. There's a little bit of a benefit because I think there is less teen drinking and sex than when I was younger.
There's no doubt about that. And connecting socially means something different now that there is the internet and there are these video games. So where we might have wanted to go out, you know, two or three or four times a week, there are a lot of kids, especially who have maybe a little bit of social anxiety, who are perfectly happy being at home more of the time. And this creates a little bit of anxiety in parents.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think, like, well, these kids are kind of finding their way, and this is a level that works for them. Mm-hmm. So there's not necessarily a need to disrupt that.
Unless they're like 35. Then maybe you say, you know what, time to venture outside a little bit and talk to people face to face.
There's an age where we cross the line,
right,
for sure.
Right.
This plays into a conversation I had with a friend the other day. I said, even though this generation feels the need to constantly be connected, you constantly have to check your phone and your email and everything like that. You constantly, I said, it's a false connection. I said, you think you're connected, but you're not with people. So my friend said, no, it's just the opposite. This gives kids that have some sort of anxiety about being around other people, it gives them other people, sometimes close by, sometimes far away. But then I said, but what are the long-term ramifications of this? When you do graduate to the next level of being around people, you won't know what to do because they're real people in front of you instead of emoticons on a phone.
Right. No, you're bringing up a really important point. We need to thread the needle between actual human contact, direct one-on-one, so that you are able to handle not just a job interview, but a date, just talking to
right.
people your own age, right? One-on-one, face-to-face, because I think we'd all agree there's a richness to that connection that is lost when you're connecting virtually, right? I don't want to take anything away from the idea that there is some degree of connection virtually. Like that is a way that people keep in touch with their friends. For those of us who have college age kids, that's a way for parents to keep in touch with their kids, for kids to keep in touch with their parents. There's a lot of good affiliated with that more contact, but there is a quality differential. And I think you're pointing out, making a good point, that we have to train our kids in both. We can't ignore the fact that a lot of the time they're going to text. And whatever comes after that, you know, right now they're on Snapchat. And, you know, we can't even get access to that. But that's how a lot of kids are communicating with one another.
Yeah.
And we have to accept that. They didn't create that. They're just following the herd in a lot of ways. But also we want to encourage at least some face-to-face, one-on-one contact.
Yeah.
I was truly encouraged when we went to California and did Disneyland and the beach one day. My kids actually put the phone down for entire days at a time. I couldn't believe it,
nice
but that was
see.
Kind of encouraging to me.
Yeah.
So then I don't care about it. If you're home, I mean, come on, sometimes you're waiting in a restaurant and, you know, I'm guilty of it sometimes too. I check Facebook while you're killing time, but we were able to do things and communicate with one another, so there's hope out there.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
In the end, John, did you serve as an intermediary and talk to this kid's parents about getting a coach, or did you reject that?
I did not at the time, but given this article, I may talk to them, not about getting a coach. I think that there's something a little bit silly about the idea in that, you know, I don't know if you're really gaining a skill. And I do think Fortnite is a skill that kids develop.
Yeah.
But I think they develop it by exposure and learning different techniques. And some of them find their own ways of learning. Some of them will watch YouTube videos of people playing Fortnite. So they learn the tricks of doing this. I think we're taking it a little too seriously if we're hiring a coach to do this kind of thing.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Real quick. Before we take a break, somebody has texted, what about the toddlers walking around playing games on their mom or dad's cell phone? Do you think that's okay too? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's another one of those things where it's not a yes or no question. It's a moderation question, right? You know, it's kind of like, you know, most of us put our kids in front of Teletubbies or, you know, or Blue's Clues or something when they were kids. So you're putting your child conveniently in front of a screen for a little while a day. If it's 6 hours a day, I have a problem with it.
But if you're at the airport, which I saw a lot of parents doing this, it was excellent. The kid was happy. The parents were happy. All in all, it was a benefit.
Saves a lot of grief, right?
Yeah. How about that?
Absolutely.
Dr. John Duffy is our guest. If you want to chime in, 312-981-7200, you can call us there or text us there. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dr. John Duffy, author of The Available Parent. Texts have been coming in at 312-981-7200. Read away, Wendy. What do they say?
All right. We were talking about a Fortnite coach. and that it may not be a good idea. A coach for that game is a great idea, says 847. It's no different than hiring a tutor to help a student academically.
I get the thought. I really do. I honestly
aren't
do.
Aren't they two different things?
But they are two different things. So when we hire an ACT tutor or a math tutor, we are hiring something for our kids that is going to that's progressive, right? So it's going to get them someplace in their life in the future that is objective where they need to go,
sure,
right?
Of course.
And Fortnite, in the vast, vast majority of cases, is not going to do that. And I'll repeat that there are some downsides to playing video games in excess, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I don't want to ignore the fact that there are profound psychological downsides to playing more than about 2 hours a day. So I would argue that that there is a qualitative difference between the two.
Is that about the line is about 2 hours a day? Should you start to worry about a kid who's playing a game so deep that it's going more than 2 hours a day?
I'm over 2 hours a day.
Are you?
Like between watching television or binge watching something, maybe a little Candy Crush.
Yeah.
Maybe a little word crossy. I'm over 2 hours a day.
The truth is, if we are all honest about it, the vast majority of us are looking at screens of one kind or another more than 2 hours a day. And yet, yes, Bill, the answer, really, really great research suggests that after about 2 hours a day, you are more likely to be anxious, you are more likely to be depressed, you're more likely to have attention issues, and you're more likely to have suicidal ideation.
Because of just the fact that you're
escaping.
Planted.
Yeah, you're escaping, you're isolated to some extent. Yeah,
and then just, when you come back, your problems are still there.
Right, right. And it's agitating. I mean, if we can picture like just sitting watching TV, playing Candy Crush even, after a little while, even if we feel inclined to keep playing, wouldn't you say like, oh, yeah, it's kind of agitating. Like, I wish I could just put this stupid thing down.
When I can't get past a level, too, it's like, God, I've been on this level for a month.
Right.
It does kind of
gets to you.
Irk you a little
right.
bit.
Right, right.
Something else, whatever happened to no, the parent needs to be in control. We can all live without constant contact. We were talking about maybe giving a toddler a screen for...
Yeah.
Come on, in the doctor's office, I've seen people do it. It works wonders. It's 5-10 minutes, you know?
And part of it is just making parenting easier with the tools that are available to you. And the fallacy in the question, I get the question, but the fallacy there is that we never, ever say no to kids these days. But parents say no to kids all the time in a lot of different ways. They're just not saying it constantly, so it's not white noise. When they say no, I think kids recognize that their parents mean it.
But haven't you heard conversations over heard conversations where you say to yourself, boy, this would have played out differently when I was a kid, where a kid is trying to sell their parent on some crazy idea, and the parent is trying to reason with them and find reasons to compromise and stuff, and you go, boy, a generation ago, the parent would have said, did I just say no? It's over.
Right, right, right.
Right?
But it's good for them to push back a little. I do that. If somebody says, no, oh, well, come on, here's why. But you ultimately have to take no for an answer.
Right, you ultimately do. But I like it when a kid pushes back a little bit. It's a different generation now than our generation. We were, speaking for myself, I was motivated a little bit by fear that wait till your father gets home. That played on me. You know,
sure.
I was like, okay, I'll be good.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the best motivator for kids. I think it's almost better. These kids are really discerning. They have a lot more information available to them than we did at
right.
earlier ages.
And attorneys.
And attorneys. Right. They've got attorneys. They've
tell
got
Mr.
papers
Cohen
drawn
what you
up.
Think. He'll take care of it.
Yeah. But right. my mom would say stuff like, can I go sleep over at Sue's house? No. Why? Because I said so. That's not an answer. And my kids will push back. If I say no, they'll say, all right, could you just tell me why?
Right.
And I like that. It creates a conversation, and there might be a time where I'm like, okay, maybe I do see your side, okay, but typically if I say no, I stick with the no.
And I like the idea of that collaboration. Hey, we'll talk it out. The no is still a no, but we'll talk it out. I'll explain myself to you a little bit, just so you know, in respect to your intelligence and tenacity.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We don't have a whole lot of time to get into this now, and I'm hoping when we see you again in 2 weeks, we'll explore this a little bit further. But mentally, what should parents be doing? There's about a month left in summer vacation,
right?
Give or take a couple of days or a week. All right, so what should be going on right now with parents and kids where they're getting them ready, saying, you still have some summertime to enjoy, but you got to get your brain ready because you're going to be in school soon.
Right. So for parents, you have to start thinking about like what it's going to look like 3 weeks down the road. So if your kids are staying up until 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning, which plenty of even pretty young kids are, and they have free reign over video games or their phone or television, you want to begin to gently rein that in so that at that very last Sunday night before school starts, you're not just creating all of that all at once, because kids don't respond to that kind of drastic change very well. So the more you make it a gradual shift into the school year, the more smooth it's going to go.
Wean them
all right,
off
hang
the summer.
On, hang on 1 second.
Yes.
I've been told we have to take a brief little break.
Okay.
All right. What were we saying?
John's just saying that with kids going back to school in a month, you don't want to shock their system. You want to kind of wean them off of the summer and maybe get the bedtime back to normal a little bit and get them in the mindset of it's still summer, you're still having fun, but slowly but surely we got to get you back into the scholastic frame of mind. Right.
And more parents hire tutors for their kids during the school year.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I'm finding really helpful that surprises me a little bit is they're starting the tutors a week or two before school starts.
Oh, really?
And that's kind of a nice, easy way to ease them into the school year. So they, first of all, start out a little bit ahead of the academic wave, right? So it's like, okay, you're struggling in math and you have been for a couple of years.
Yeah.
We're going to get that math tutor in here early.
That's a great idea.
And get you started early.
Very
and that
strong.
Seems to, kids resist it, but once they actually do it, it tends
it
to
makes
work pretty
sense.
Well.
Yeah.
There's a person who really has a bone to pick with me in the way my parenting skills are, because it's like, yeah, Wendy, we knew you'd give in already. Parenting also works wonders. Don't be lazy. And no, because I said so is an answer. Stand up for yourself. Everything is not a negotiation.
I'm going to stand up for you a little bit, Wendy. You're not saying that no isn't an answer. I think you're saying I'm going to give my children the respect, my guys, the respect of recognizing their point of view, really hearing them out, because they're getting to be closer to adulthood. If they were 5, I'd feel a little differently
Absolutely.
About that, right? And yet, I'm still going to be the arbiter. I'm going to make that final decision, but I want them to know that they are heard. There's a difference between that and just like saying no, flat out no. That doesn't work very well with this generation. Creates conflict that we don't need. There's other places where we're going to end up in conflict. You don't need it there.
And I feel like it's aligns to communication. If a parent just says no because I said so, I have a feeling that kid's not going to come to you and talk to you openly about something in the future. So we're all in this together. We all love our kids, and we all try our best. Quit judging everybody.
Yeah.
That said, 30 years ago, that's all it took was a parent going, did I just say no? Because I'm pretty sure I just said no, and that was the end of the conversation, right?
Absolutely. But I like parenting better now, Bill,
because
it is about connecting with your kids and kind of creating this kind of long game, lifelong connection.
That's where it
right?
is. Yeah.
You know, whereas I always picture Thanksgiving dinner 20 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us make it to our parents' house, mm-hmm. but a lot of us do it begrudgingly. a lot of us aren't thrilled to do that.
Yeah.
And I think most of us would say, I want my kids 20 years from now to want to come and see me and not think back to their adolescence and think, my parents shut me out every time I had anything to say. Why do I want to go back there? I'm going to get out as soon as dessert's served.
So true. That's Dr. John Duffy. Where can people hear you, John?
Okay. The best place, the clearinghouse for anything about me is drjohnduffy.com. You can hear my podcast on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher.
And WGN Plus.
And WGN Plus.
It's called Better.
Yes.
That's the name of the podcast.
Thank
You're
you,
awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
I got to go text this guy because after all that, I love you, Wendella. Too bad I don't love you back.
Wow, that's it.
We'll take a quick break and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. There's music.
Benny Hill.
Yeah. Very appropriate.
We took a commercial in the middle of a... I don't know. I don't know what's happening here,
It'll
Bill.
Be okay. Yesterday, you talked to Eric Rung of WGN Television and of WGN Radio, and explained how he had a mishap during his news.
A little kid interrupted him.
Yeah. And I watched last night to see if there was a trend.
Oh,
I wanted to see if that was like a thing. If kids now in and around Chicago say, "Hey, let's play a game when Eric Rung is on TV, we'll bother him." But I didn't see, there was no evidence of that last night.
No evidence last night. You know, I thought twice about posting that on Facebook because I don't want that to become
a
trend.
You don't want kids to think that's an option when they see you doing a news report that they should come up and hang out with you.
Exactly. You know, I tell you what, though, had the story been a little different, I think I could have played it off a little differently.
It was a sad story.
Yeah.
It was a horrible story.
Right. It just wasn't appropriate. But, you know, had that been kind of a fun feature type story, which is, you know, has happened in the past. We'll be doing, like we were talking about yesterday, about the Cubs games and things like that. I can generally get them involved with it. You know, sometimes people will take pictures while we're on the air and things like that.
Sure.
So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But, that can't be a trend.
All right. That was a one and out, thankfully. Because you don't.
Well, you don't know that. It might happen again.
You think it could happen again.
I'm going to be watching every time you're on, Eric, because I bet Bill Leff is going to do it next time.
If you could let me know where your story is emanating from, Eric, I could try my best to come out and help you with the story.
I will text you the location.
All right.
And our hit time for when we are going to be on. So
that'll
you'll know
fun.
Exactly
All right.
when to be there.
We need some WGN radio t-shirts.
Yeah.
Because when we worked at the Loop, there were many times that people, actually sometimes the perps were wearing an AM 1000
shirt.
Somebody
who had obviously committed a crime and they were bringing them to justice.
Wearing a Loop shirt.
You would see our shirt on them.
That
was, what a proud moment that was.
Yeah, that wasn't great. But a lot of times you'd see people in the background wearing them, and it's, you know, free press.
Yeah.
I am also noticing, this bothers my younger son, Dylan. Tom Skilling does the weather. We love him. We watch it. We look forward to it.
The best that's ever been.
Oh, my God. He's on, you know, from 2 in the morning till 3 in the morning.
Yes.
Like, just 25 hours.
Tom Skilling.
But he's out of the screenshot a lot. I know he wants us to see the map, but it's like, I want to see Tom Skilling. And you just see, like, sometimes
Where
just a quarter of him.
Where is he?
He goes to his left side, which would be, as you're looking at the TV screen, to the right.
Yeah.
He's showing the map and the, you know, but he's not, I'd like to see him.
Right.
And if, you know, it's just like a half of him sometimes.
Yeah. Eric, could you bring that up at the next meeting that we want to see more of Tom Skilling during the weather?
We should talk to Tom.
I could probably give him, I'll talk to him today.
Yeah.
Because when he calls in to do the weather, I'll make sure that he knows that you guys want to see more
of him. We want to see more of him during the news.
Yeah, I just feel bad. It's like, you know, I know he wants us to see the map, but I'd rather see him.
Right.
I don't want a half of Tom Skilling.
Why don't they blue screen the map on him so that he wears a solid t-shirt and then he goes, "Look, the cold front is right around my abdomen area and it's coming up quickly," and then he just shows us exactly where on him the storm would be.
I enjoy that, although he'd be feeling himself as he's pointing
something
things
for
out.
Everybody wins. I think it's a good idea. I also like that he keeps telling us what the models are saying.
Yeah,
I want to see the models. I'm anxious to see the models. The models are telling us it's going to be cold throughout the weekend, Wendy. Well, let the models come out and tell us.
Well, supermodels?
I think they are supermodels. He just says models because he's a modest man.
Hmm. I don't remember ever seeing supermodels walking around WGN TV, but...
All right.
Well, I love Tom Skilling.
We want to see more of him.
I do.
More Tom Skilling.
More Tom Skilling.
More Tom Skilling.
I told
All right.
you, sometimes when there's an unflattering picture of me on Facebook, I will edit some of me out
yes.
so I look thinner.
Yes.
I don't know if he's doing that, but he shouldn't have to.
He doesn't need to do that. He's Tom Skilling.
He's Tom Skilling. He
I
want to
watch
anything.
Him.
Yes. Yes.
And I just don't want him in half or a quarter of the screen. I want my Tom full blown.
If you go to Bradley Place, there's a suggestion box as you walk in.
I'm not going all the way.
Fill out a Dindex card.
There's no
and
easy
put
way
it in
to
there.
Get there. There and your house are two of the farthest
yes.
places from my house in
yes.
the world.
By design.
I could drive to Canada quicker than I can to your house or to Bradley Place.
No, I know. That's very, very true. That's very true. So, Eric, again, quickly today, give out where your assignments are so if kids are listening and they have some free time and they want to say hello to you.
My assignment today is going to be right here on the 18th floor.
You're going to be here the whole time?
I am going to be here all day today.
Who got the Lollapalooza assignment? Who's going to be out
there?
Well,
Dean's going to be out
there. Dean will be there for part of it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He always has a big report, and I think that's going to air probably tomorrow. He'll be
sure.
out there all weekend. And
for
then,
the opening ceremony.
Yeah, exactly. I will probably be out there Friday and Saturday at some point.
Who's the band you're most excited to see at Lollapalooza, Eric?
Oh, Jack White.
Yeah.
I love him.
I do,
God,
too. His new album is outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
How about you guys? Who are you guys excited for?
Jack White, but I have to be honest with you, I've never been to Lollapalooza because I'm a poser, and I do love live music, but I like it in small doses. That is too overwhelming for me.
It's a lot. It's a lot. That's true. I've actually only been there to cover it. I've actually never been there as a fan.
As a fan? Oh, that's too bad. You should go as a fan one year.
Well, I keep getting scheduled to work.
Yeah, that's true.
I have friends that bring their family. I mean, like, it's a family outing.
Yeah.
And I guess it kind of works out good because they're teenagers in early 20s, so the kids can go see what they want to see, and then the parents see what they want to see.
Yep.
Something I think they even have a kids' tent out there, a kids' music venue.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, and again, you do what you want and what you think's right, but I see a lot of babies there, and I don't think the babies are going to remember this.
Babies go to Lollapalooza?
Mm-hmm.
Do they really?
I've seen some.
Do you have to pay for that? Because it's an expensive ticket. They don't charge babies.
They can't. It's got to be like 2 and under free.
Yeah, yeah.
How could they charge a baby?
I don't know.
A baby.
But hearing a baby yell Freebird is always one of the most exciting things you'll ever hear.
A concert.
Right, right.
Well, those are one of the things you can bring in. Although,
ironically, the Babies are one of the bands that have never been to Lollapalooza. Why don't the Babies
play? Because they're not
it?
Together anymore.
They're not?
What was their big hit?
Isn't It Time? Was that from the Babies?
No.
No?
Oh, please make me go all the way.
Oh, that's them, huh?
Is that Isn't them? That them?
If you're asking me, I don't know.
Eric wasn't born for this.
You know, you have a computer right in front of you.
I do? Is that what this is? Oh, I didn't know what this was. What
did you think it was, a TV?
I had no idea what it was until just now.
What was their big hit?
Is it John Waite? Is that the guy who is with the Babies? Hmm.
I'm seeing a couple here. A baby, which is apropos.
That's an actual baby.
Every time I think of you.
The Babies Mess Me Around.
I don't know what that is.
That just says full performance. That's not a song.
No.
Isn't It Time, you mentioned?
Yeah, that's the one.
I don't know if I know that song, do I? This is by the Babies.
Yeah.
Hang on, I gotta skip the ad. All right, let's see. Oh, yeah.
You know this song.
Yeah.
This is very pretty. These are so. If you just.
Love was the last thing I had on my mind.
Everybody. If you're just tuning in, these are songs and performers you will not be hearing at Lollapalooza this weekend.
Although John Waite has been at City Winery, because remember we just had him in the studio?
Yeah. He's
what
great.
Was there? Who did All the Way?
The Babies and the Goo Goo Dolls should do a show together, an underage only show.
What would they call it?
Goo Goo Gaga. No, that would be, if it was the Goo Goo Dolls and Lady Gaga, then you got a show called Goo Goo Gaga. That would be a killer show.
Usually it's better if you work on the joke before you go on the air with it.
I'm so busy. I don't have time for that, Wendy. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there is more show, believe it or not. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I made a mistake. I thought this was the Babies.
Wendy!
You know who it is?
This sounds like the Raspberries to me. This
because I told
like
you,
because Babies.
As soon as we went to a commercial break, I said the Raspberries, and you go, "Really?" So you didn't know. This is from Awesome Mix 1 from Guardians of the Galaxy. That's what I loved about Guardians.
You brought back the music from a while ago.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Ooga chaga, ooga ooga. You know, BJ Thomas was just at the Arcata Theater.
How's BJ Thomas doing?
Great. My son Michael went to see him, and he did the original Hooked on a Feeling.
Yes.
Before Blue Swede took
it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the Raspberries.
This is a nice sound to it. An almost babyish sound.
A little bit, yeah. All right.
There's
thanks for giving me some credit.
I'm trying my best.
Thank you.
Trying my best. Did you see this kid who's all over the internet, this baby?
Speaking of which,
it all ties in.
Look at that's a brilliant mistake, as Elvis Costello would say.
It all ties in, Wendy. There's a little baby on the internet named Chenko, Chanco. Have you not seen the pictures of Chenko? Chenko's a 6-month-old who has more hair than any human being you've ever seen in your life. It's insane.
Than
the
Chewbacca?
Amount.
Chewbacca. What is Chewbacca's son called?
No. I said human.
Oh.
Chewbacca, as you know, is a Wookiee. Yeah. What is Chewbacca's son called, did you say?
Yeah, he has a son.
Oh.
I don't know. I thought you would know.
I don't know. An adorable Japanese baby is winning hearts around the world. Stole my heart, Wendy, as a side note.
I hope he gets it back.
Thanks to her amazing head of hair. Chenko is only 6 months old, but has already reached the hair goal status, I don't know what that is. Is that something I should know? I've never heard
of
it.
What do the models say?
Let's take a look at the models, Wendy, and find out why Yungchenko has so much hair. Of her epically thick mane. When you see this kid's hair...
How do you spell it?
C-H-A-N-C-O. That's Mako. That's Chenko.
Amco.
Oh, is that Amco?
Yeah, I think so.
Double A-M-C-O, Amco, right. What's Mako?
That's getting your car painted.
Oh, right. Baby Chenko's family shares her cosmetological adventures.
Say that word again.
It's a word I never thought I'd say.
Say it again.
Cosmetological.
Good.
I'll take a look at the models on that, Wendy. On a special Instagram account where they describe the hair diary. When she was born, she came out with a lot of hair, Chenko's mother, Mommy, M-A-M-I, ironically, told Huffington Post. What a perfect name for this story. We wanted to document it since we thought it'll be fun. To date, baby Chenko's Instagram
has...
Oh, my
God.
See what I mean?
That's a wig.
Have you not seen this before?
No. That's like Dolly Parton's hair on a baby.
I couldn't figure out. Well, except Dolly Parton's hair had like a blondish white tint to it.
But it looks like it's ratted into this big bouffant.
That's it. Remember Wayne Cochran?
Yeah.
No relation.
Eddie Cochran.
Oh, is it Eddie Cochran?
Wayne must have been your neighbor.
No, we don't have any neighbors. Maybe it was Eddie Cochran. Was that the one who had the giant
pompadour?
Yeah, the pompadour. Yeah. All right, so it's Eddie Cochran. So when I saw this baby, I thought, this is like Eddie Cochran's kid.
And the weird thing is, this kid can play the guitar.
Oh, like a maniac. Absolute maniac. I don't know who that is. When she was born, she came out with a lot of hair, Chenko's mother, Mommy, said. To date, baby Chenko's Instagram has 120,000 followers.
You're right.
This is a six-month-old kid.
No, I'm going home.
What?
Wayne Cochran.
I told you.
I know. I don't know who that is. He is Talvin Wayne Cochran was an American soul singer known for his outlandish outfits and his pompadour hairstyle.
Yeah.
He was sometimes referred to as the White Knight of Soul.
The White Knight of Soul.
I didn't know who he was.
I'm embarrassed for you.
That looks like his brain is giant. It is the biggest pompadourian thing I've ever seen.
Right.
All right.
Now, his hair in the picture you just showed me is a golden hue, but it changed color. Like, depending on when you saw him, sometimes he had darker hair.
They've only shown him blonde.
Blonde, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen any.
But it was for him and Baby Chenko, the two of them. Boy, what a show that would be. Huh? You get those guys together and do a hair off. That's a show.
The baby's not going to sing.
No, the baby wouldn't sing. Wayne would sing. The baby would just enjoy it.
Wayne is with us anymore.
No? Oh, sad. But it's the same. Like, on an adult, it's jarring because you say to yourself, well, that guy needs a haircut. But on a baby, you go, a baby can't have that much hair. But baby Chenko proves us wrong. We are just so surprised, Chenko's mom said, of the overwhelming response to her daughter's locks, L-O-C-K-S. But there is no denying that she has a lot of hair. And this is pretty unique to see, which is obvious. Ultimately, the family is happy to bring joy to others. See, that's the key, Wendy. When you look at baby Chenko, what do you feel? You feel joy, don't you?
I don't feel anything. I feel shock.
More
not in a bad way, but like...
Why do you say that?
Because that how old is this baby?
6 months old. So this is the baby at six, and when the baby was born, I mean, even like when the baby was just seconds later, the baby had a full-on giant head of hair, but now it's out of control. It's all over the place.
Cute baby.
Adorable baby. Jets, can we put this on our Facebook page? Or have we used up all of our... Our hair space on Facebook. Yeah, all right. Ultimately, the family is, like I said, happy to bring joy to others. We hope people can enjoy seeing both her and her hair grow, says her mommy named Mommy. M-A-M-I. I want baby... I said to Jazz, I go, let's get baby Chenko on the show. And Jasmine just looked at me like, that's impossible. But nothing's impossible. Baby Chenko proves that.
I think we could... fake getting her on because it's a baby. She's not going to talk.
Yeah.
I broke my computer looking at Wayne Cochran's hair.
You did?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I can't get the brightness up.
Oh, really?
My mouse won't work. I have, this is like a technical
it's a bad day
crazy
for you.
Day today.
It's a bad day for you.
All right, well, should we see what's coming? We're going to the stream because it'll be smooth sailing there, I'm sure.
Yes.
Our stream is wake free today.
Yeah.
Bonus hour, we'll do that. Steve Bertrand is standing by and ready for the Wintrust business lunch. What do you have coming up? I thought you said they were ready. I'm going home.
Can I say I'm part of the show and it's fun for me to watch just to see your head?
I don't know how to switch buttons.
What the, I'll do it for you. Yeah. All right. Ben Cortez, engineer Ben Cortez, saving the day, Wendy.
I will tell you.
Yes.
That I'm going to talk. All right. Now Bertrand will tell us what's going on.